This is LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
Well, the brown tide caused by some of the harmful algal blooms we have discussed in the past and certainly endanger everything within the shellfish, the eelgrass, but cleared now from the Great South Bay, at least for now, and many kind of wondering just for how long. Here to talk about it is the man who knows everything about the quality of water here on the island as well, protecting the very essence of it in fine fashion. His name, of course, Kevin McAllister. Always nice to speak to him. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Jay. Doing great, thank you.
Were you surprised at this report? I'm talking about the Great South Bay. We're talking about discolored water, in essence, here, and caused by, as you and I have discussed prior, these algal blooms. Why do you think it kind of disappeared, and how long do you think it'll stay that way?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's temperature dependent, so it had the bloom, and generally these blooms, this one was prolonged, I guess, pushing 10 weeks. So ultimately, they run their course. Finally, they die out, and then the system kind of gets back to some semblance of normalcy.
Interesting, because I know
I suspect we'll see it again. It's typical that the late part of the season, you get another bloom that is normal. We'll see if it reoccurs in Great South Bay come, say, September.
Yeah, the brown tide, I guess, hadn't been seen with, this type of look, if you want to call it that, intensity, whatever, I guess, since, 2007, 2008, actually. And I guess it surfaced on our shores even into the mid-80s and destroyed a large bay scallop fishery, I was reading, in the Peconic Estuary, again, going back to the mid-80s, Kevin. So I guess something of this nature is somewhat alarming in the fact that, it's disappeared, but I guess questions always will arise for how long it stays away here.
It first appeared in the Peconics in 85, so it really encompassed a great portion of the estuary. And, as you're describing the density in Great South Bay, it was very intense. So that opaque water, there's no nutritional value to the algae. It outcompetes other algae that is important food, of course, for the shellfish. So it did decimate the scallop population in the 80s, largely because of disappearance of eelgrass, in their inability to photosynthesize. So they need light. They're a plant. And if the water's coffee-colored for a prolonged period, you're going to have massive die-off of eelgrass.
Does temperature change have a lot to do as far as where it sits, intensity, whatever? Does it have something to do with it as far as seasons are concerned here?
Dr. Gobler is the expert, and there is influence from temperature and also salinity on when it sets up. The past couple of years, we saw brown tide in the eastern part of the lagoon, Great South Bay. So we're talking Shinnecock and Quantuck Bay. And, it did not appear there this year. So, it's a head-scratcher in a lot of ways. It is dependent, of course, on nitrogen input. So we're talking septic influences, of course, lawn fertilizers, the stormwater loads. I think there's on the order of a couple thousand pipes that discharge, nutrient-laden stormwater into the lagoon, during rain events. So it's a big, big receiving area for a lot of pollution.
Talking with Kevin McAllister, Defend H2O. Oh, Kevin, let's move on to a couple other things while we have you here, and that is, I remember when the governor actually vetoed legislation a couple of years ago, all regarding, water protection and everything else. But listen, it's all about safeguarding groundwater right now, and you're looking at some much needed regulation of. You and I have discussed this prior as well regarding large-scale mulch and composting operations, and they have been shown to be key contaminants into groundwater. And I know there was a state probe of an operation on Horse Block Road in Yaphank recently, but certainly you are looking, one would be, of some improved bills to make sure things are protected around here.
It's a overdue, quite frankly. And, you know, if you've seen the compost facilities, even a backyard pile for that matter, you know, it creates almost like a tea. It's very rich, and ultimately that will percolate down into groundwater. You know, my speculation is, you know, the plants that are being mulched, coming, you know, landscape material from all over, you know, are they uptaking toxins and, you know, nutrients? We're seeing high levels of manganese, and I think they're somewhat sequestered in the plants until they're mulched, and then that tea is released through decomposition, and then you know, percolates down into groundwater, and then we have problems that for drinking water supplies, and of course receiving waters, you know, for this material.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about climate change, we talk about this type of legislation, protecting the environment, and whatnot. But nonetheless, you know, somehow, some way, we have forgot about, you know, the water supply. And only in recent years have we spoken about this, with nitrogen pollution and everything else coming into play in the last 3 or 4 years. So it's something that has certainly been a flag now, and really put into play in the last couple of years, Kevin.
When you consider Long Island as sole source aquifer, I mean, it's an island, you know, and I say that literally, of course, but, you know, relative to the groundwater supply. And, of course, over the decades of overdevelopment, you know, the release of toxins, household septic waste, so the nitrogen levels and other toxins, as we're describing, from industrial plumes, the mulching operations, you know, we are what we drink, and unfortunately, we've got a real crisis, and we need state legislation, we need Suffolk County to really step up and you know, move forward legislation that's going to provide greater protection, because, you know, we don't have another source of drinking water.
Kevin, you know, one of the things on this program, especially in the season we are in right now, is, you know, we check out the beaches. And I've noticed this particular season more so than others, of the closing of some beaches, you know, due to contaminated water and whatnot. Just levels not acceptable as far as bacteria is concerned. Are you noticing that as well? And if so, why would you think would be the main factor here? You know, listen, there was a couple of weeks ago I was watching something where there was seaweed that was just in abundance, more than normal type of seaweed conditions, just being thrust upon a beach. But in essence, so many have been closed to swimming because of contaminated waters. Why now more than ever, you think, we have had this influx?
The beach closures are associated with the stormwater pulses. So during rain events, you know, everything's washing off into the receiving waters, and, you know, ultimately out the inlets, affecting ocean beaches, you know, and there's seepage there as well. I think in part the monitoring has been increased. You know, the counties, of course, have done this for the bathing beaches, but, you know, other areas are being monitored, and, you know, there's also the precautionary principle. I know the state DEC will close shellfish beds based on rain events without any real measurement. I think it's just a accumulation of, you know, we reached the tipping point, and again, these, you know, these rain events are just washing land clear of, you know, contaminants, bacterial contaminants, you know, affecting bathing beaches and shellfish beds.
No question about it. Kevin Callister with us, Defend H2O. Before we let you go, let's just talk a little bit of the septic systems that have been discussed feverishly in the last year or so, talking about the Ronkonkoma hub hookup and systems put into play there. Over budget they are. Nonetheless, septic hookups have been a main topic of conversation. Kevin, a very complicated issue nonetheless here.
Jay, I guess we're speaking about sewering.
Yes, indeed.
Areas.
Yep.
Yeah, the hookups, of course, are very costly, and, you know, the intent is to protect groundwater and thus the receiving waters. You know, one of the concerns I have, and you know, particularly in some of the South Shore communities, you know, we have to be very mindful that the sewer districts don't lead to intense development, and ultimately the benefits of searing can be negated by just sheer numbers. You know, case in point, the Mastic-Shirley district proposed for the commercial district, you know, all positive, but the assertion that we're going to protect and restore the Forge River, well, I've looked at the analysis, and you can see, I believe there was a 15% reduction, and they weren't factoring in the redevelopment that's already been basically zoned. So it's, you know, the number is a little fuzzy, and I think there has to be full disclosure to the public on these sewer districts, what they mean for water quality benefits, what the financial burden will be, and, you know, ultimately then make the proper decisions based on full information.
Well, you talk about a miscalculation, though, Kevin, when it seems this county, with estimates, you know, you're talking about these waste disposal systems and a lot of homes in Suffolk County. I think it was like 360,000 homes that need to be replaced. And, you know, they've established this fund for 4 years that can provide grants for about, 200 or so systems a year. State, I know, has set aside millions for a septic system, kind of similar, a replacement program. But I don't know if there are rules that have been firmly in place yet to reestablish just how much money will be allocated statewide. But I know Suffolk, 10 towns or so, requesting a lot of money in state funding. Do you think somehow, you know, this has been a very tangled subject to try and straighten it out. It's going to take a while. It just seems to me it's going to take a while until everything as far as the funding is going to be straightened out for what's coming down from Albany, the county, and everything else as far as allocations here.
I agree, and I think what's important is this initial step, and certainly I've been calling for this for years, is to embrace these technologies that denitrify and to transition from, you know, the conventional septic systems into these denitrification units. They are more costly. We've got to have the funding sources to help offset those costs to homeowners. You know, I'm optimistic that the state will come in a big way. I know Suffolk County is proceeding on new legislation that will start to require these for new development, and, you know, hopefully they'll include, you know, failing systems that we have to strive for, these advanced treatment systems. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is a long-term prospect any way you shake it. And, you know, I think, you know, the community has to get behind it and also be patient, because these fixes are not going to happen overnight.
It certainly will not. We need a lot of help, that is for sure. Always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll talk soon again.
Thank you, Jay. Have a great day.